Can Venezuela afford to pay its debts and a digital privacy in India and beyond?
If Mark Zuckerberg can spend $30 million buying every house around his because he needs more privacy, I think all of us deserve as well.
This is the Marketplace Morning Report, live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. Venezuela has been racked by food and medicine shortages, and it's been hit particularly hard by something we've been talking about this week, commodity prices, namely oil. The country relied heavily on oil revenue. When prices collapsed a few years ago, it began to suffer. Now, President Nicolas Maduro has announced he will try to restructure the country's debt repayments, an admission that could have serious repercussions. The BBC's Katie Watson reports.
Venezuela blames the US sanctions for its economic crisis. Mr. Trump has imposed financial restrictions on the Venezuelan government, and Nicolas Maduro said the country was unable to refinance its bonds because of what he called the global financial dictatorship. Vice President Tariq El-Assami, a man who's on the US sanctions list for alleged corruption, will be heading up the debt restructuring. While that will unnerve investors, they're at least relieved that Venezuela said it would make the $1.2 billion bond payment that was due on Thursday. Even so, Mr. El-Assami threw doubt on that, saying that financial firm Euroclear had blocked the payment because of complications over the sanctions. In Sao Paulo, I'm the BBC's Katie Watson for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Germany's DAX is up 53 points, or 0.4%. The index is leading European shares higher after a quiet session in Asia, with trading in Japan closed for a holiday. It's launch day for Apple's iPhone X. Excitement around the new device, combined with the better-than-expected third-quarter earnings released last night, helped briefly push the company's market value above $900 billion for the first time ever. Now, India's government has been trying to register 1.3 billion citizens for a new biometric data card called Aadhaar. It was designed to let the poorest people receive benefits, but many activists have been campaigning against it. Mishi Chowdhury is a technology lawyer with legal practices in New York and New Delhi. She's been telling me why people are so concerned.
It's like my entire life is going to be tied to a 12-digit number, which also has my biometric data. The government does not allow any questioning of what are the security parameters around Aadhaar. The frauds are already happening. 10,000 farmers linked to one Aadhaar number. So when we are told that this is a perfect system of technology, it's going to be a panacea and solve all our problems, it's a little hard to believe if you are letting technology as well as policy lead you.
Where do you think we are in terms of the privacy of our data? Are different parts of the world facing the same sorts of issues?
There's at least an acceptance everywhere in the world that the political economy of internet is now tied so closely to advertising. That advertising economy requires surveillance. And whether you call it surveillance capitalism, on which the companies ride, and thereafter the governments come and piggy bank, or whatever you call it, the issue is everywhere. The platform companies would like us to believe that privacy is dead unless you are a rich person and you can pay for it. And questions are being raised for different reasons now. What it does to democracy, that's now just come up with Mueller's investigation into platform companies. But overall, it's pretty clear that European Union is the only place which is taking its citizens' privacy a little more seriously. America is very laissez-faire approach. China, Russia, Iran are a totally different place altogether in a race to the bottom. But if Mark Zuckerberg can spend $30 million buying every house around his because he needs more privacy, I think all of us deserve as well.
Mishi Chowdhury. Now, to conclude our look at global commodities this week, we're going to the London Metal Exchange, where traders still buy metal for everything from Coke cans to car doors by personally bellowing and gesticulating on the floor. The BBC's Su Ping Chan reports.
45 at 50, still not.
It sounds like a different language. Words used here at the London Metal Exchange are incomprehensible to anyone except those working on this trading floor, known as the Ring. The LME is the last open outcry exchange in Europe, and as traders compete for orders, it can get loud.
Hold the one trading, 55 trading.
One doing, hold the one. Merrick's making it.
Giles Plum, who's been trading at the LME for 22 years, says things can sometimes get heated.
Somebody said to me when I first started trading that as long as you don't get too happy when you make money, then you won't get too upset when you lose money.
While it might sound like chaos, the LME has strict rules. Gum chewing, open button shirts and swearing are all banned. Policing it all is Peter Childs, head of market operations at the LME.
The dealers are seated in the ring. On occasions where, you know, the markets are particularly busy and the ring's busy, you know, dealers may stand, but they have to keep one foot against the bench where their seat is. If they're sort of leaping around in the middle of the ring, then they're going to obscure the view of other dealers.
The LME has come a long way since open outcry trading began in 1877. Matthew Chamberlain, its chief executive, believes he can drive it into a new era with lithium and cobalt contracts as electric and hybrid cars become the norm.
Of course, we have competitors in the US, in Asia, but I don't think that central role of the LME is going to be displaced.
For Giles, trading is over, for now at least.
How was that?
Hot, loud, as usual. I normally take about an hour to calm down on the way home on the train. It was profitable, so that's all right.
So you made some money today?
I did, yeah. Doesn't always happen that way.
Just another day in the office.
Just another day in the office, exactly.
In London, I'm the BBC's Suping Chan for Marketplace.
Finally, if you can't afford designer shoes, how about pasta? Dolce & Gabbana have teamed up with an Italian pasta maker to produce limited edition cans and aprons. Bon appetit. I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.